This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Landing? No, babe. Look in landing. All right. Please forget that ever happened. My name is Matthew Robertson. This is the Lookout Landing Podcast. And I am overjoyed, thrilled, elated to be joined by my friend Eric Sanford, a.k.a. Sanford & Son, a.k.a. E40, a.k.a. Eric B for President,
yes,
a.k.a. Eric, a.k.a. Dad Niehaus. What's up, man?
Thank you. Not much. Glad to be here in the illustrious recording studio.
Oh, yes.
Of the LL Podcast.
Yeah.
If you could turn the music up in my headphones, that'd be great.
Yeah. Y'all can't see it, but we're actually in a very large boardroom. Mm-hmm. There's a chandelier above us. Mm-hmm. Reed's drinking champagne, and there's acrylic paintings of each of us on the walls. It's very opulent. Thank you, Vox Media, for setting this up.
Yeah.
I really am. This is great because we... For the listeners at home, to pull back the curtain a little bit, we never really do these in person. It's usually done remotely. So to be able to actually talk to a person who is here,
yes,
in real life in front of my face makes this much more humanizing.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's better for the overall podcast experience when you can do it. I mean, obviously we got folks spread out all over the country. We got our New York correspondent, Cooperstown, over there, John.
Yes.
So, you know.
Who bailed on us.
we got to get his insight.
Somewhere. We do. Yeah, I think too it's perfect because we don't have to do the like,
right.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I know how to read your facial cues, I think, to know when it's my turn to talk.
Yeah, and plus, since you've taken over the podcast or kind of become the point person for it, I've noticed that you, because I'm an avid listener. As a staffer, as a somewhat editor, I got to keep up with what's going on the site. To keep up with the content. So, yeah, Matthew does an awesome job of... I've noticed you've gotten better at not talking over people when you guys do the kind of three-way podcast, because you'll give it a good weight, you know, like a weight, a good beat before you start in.
I do that.
It makes it hard to kind of riff off each other, though. Like, make jokes, which, you know, is your bread and butter.
We're relying on talent a lot, which shout out to Kate and John, who have big things coming down the pike.
They bring the knowledge.
They do. They're like, I feel like I'm like Rick Rubin and their Run and DMC.
Yeah,
that's the perfect analogy here. Before we get into it, we should introduce you more formally. You are a writer for the site and community engagement officer?
Yeah.
Is that your title? That up?
I don't like the term officer. I prefer manager.
Well, I went CEO, community engagement officer.
Good point. I do community engagement, and part of that is that I do the weekly Fan Post Fridays.
Correct.
Postings every Friday, so respond to those prompts, get on that. Or drop comments, because we opened up the comment section on those in the last year or so, just to get more people talking. And sometimes it's not always a prompt that deserves a whole fan post. So,
right.
I also run the Lookout Landing Facebook page and the Instagram whenever I can, especially when I'm actually at games or at the Aqua Sox games. Always like to do some Instagram live videos while I'm there. It's always fun, good time. And that's what I do, and also write, you know, recaps whenever I can. But
yes, you know. Really a utility man of Lookout Landing.
True, a real Dylan Moore.
You are a lot like Dylan Moore. I've noticed that about you. I just didn't want to bring it up until you did, you know. But also, perhaps most importantly, for the sake of this episode, we are seated here in the illustrious boardroom. Mm-hmm. During the first week of spring training games, and you are about to go in person to Arizona to watch this happen. And you have done this how many times before? How many times have you been to
just
spring training?
Just once. Yeah. I went in 2016 with my wife and two of our friends. And it was like, wow, why didn't I do this before? It's so much fun. It just like being able, the access that you get to the players and stuff there, and just the scale of it is much smaller, more intimate. The weather is usually great. You know, you might catch, you know, random rainstorms, or like, you know, it gets cold at night, of course, because it's still February or March. But overall, the weather is awesome, and of course, like for us poor pasty Northwesterners that are just like dying at this point of the winter, it's nice to get away to somewhere warm for a few days and catch some meaningless baseball.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been exactly zero times, so everything that you say will make me 100% smarter. I do need to do it. I should absolutely do
one
it.
These days.
Perhaps yeah. Next year.
Yeah.
Now that I'm more of an established adult, I have actual money to spend on frivolous baseball games in the desert.
Right.
And I also want to catch up with some of the players, the ones that would be willing to talk to us, maybe do a cast or two.
Yeah, now that like we're, you know, the site in general, and you've increased your prospect knowledge for sure.
Oof.
Like and
11-fold.
You'd actually know like who some of the players are, and like to get to chat with them and see, you know who they're calling in the 7th-8th inning.
Yeah, and try to like get actual things out of them. Like, this is no shade to anyone, but today is Sunday the 23rd, the Mariners played a spring training game on TV today, and they interviewed Sam Delaplane, and it was fairly obvious that Dave Sims was using the interview as an actual way to learn about Sam Delaplane rather than, like, researching him and asking questions about that. He was like, Sam, one of his questions was literally, tell us about what kind of pitcher you are.
Who are you?
Yeah.
What do you do for the team?
Yeah. What would you say you do here, Sam?
That's amazing.
So, like, obviously Dave Sims has, I think in the offseason he has like 5 other jobs, so I can understand how he wouldn't know who Sam Delaplane is.
Football and stuff.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. We are the people who should be talking to Sam Delaplane about, you know, his exploits down in Modesto and all that. And
yeah, Root Sports, call us.
We're available.
Or we can talk to the prospects for you.
We can
do that dirty work.
So, okay, what do you remember about the first time you went in 2016? Like, what was the number one thing that made you sort of go, oh my God, this is incredible? Like you said, you like were wondering why you'd never done it before. Mm-hmm. What was it that made you realize how magical the Peoria Sports Complex is?
So the first story that comes to mind is we went there right during the last week of spring training, so things were wrapping up. And so the roster was going to be announced pretty soon. So all the players that are kind of on the bubble are, you know, trying to work their asses off and make it happen. And one of those was Deho Lee, who, as some readers may know, is a huge favorite of mine. I loved watching him on the Mariners. And I was already like hyped on him at that point because, in the off season, we heard all about him and like, you know, watched all of his NPB highlights and his KBO highlights. And so I was psyched to be able to see him in person, like, before the season started. And so I saw him get into a couple games, and then he didn't get much of a chance to hit. And then it was the second to last game of the Cactus League. And we got there early to that one, and it was a home game in Peoria. And so we're in the backfields, and I was watching like the A group of hitters like do batting practice.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like Cano, Cruz, I think Ketel Marte was in that group at that
time.
Yeah,
the guys who were gonna make the big league team and the actual good hitters.
Yeah, and Deho was in there too. So it was like a lot of the guys that are like the big boppers, and, mm-hmm. and so. So they all took their turns and everything, and then they were done, and like pretty much everyone was leaving because the game was starting in like less than an hour, and Deho's like stayed and he insisted on like doing more batting practice, like he was just hitting balls like for an extra good 20 minutes or so, he was just going at it with coaches thrown to him, and. At that point, Scott Service and Jerry DePoto were still there, like watching. They've been hanging out and watching the BP and everything. And so at this point, there were way fewer people and players around there. So I crept up. I was all lurking up there, getting as close as I could. Uh-huh. Like we're standing behind the fence where Scott and Jerry were, and I could barely overhear what they were saying to each other. And at one point, I definitely heard like clearly that. Jerry was talking to Scott, and he's like, "Yep, this is it right here. You know, these are the guys that put in the extra work. They deserve to make the team." And then like 2 days later, they announced the roster, and he made the team.
Wow!
So like, I felt like I was like, "Whoa!" I like got to like witness just a little slice of something that like you would never see otherwise.
Well, and if you weren't there, who knows if Dejo makes the team? You know? it's a butterfly effect situation. Wow. You're not there, maybe Dejo's not there. There's a whole sort of snowball effect that could have happened.
That's a solid point. I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're welcome.
Did you like just follow Jerry DePoto and Scott around after that? Like, were you trying to get more intel?
I definitely was. Yeah, I was like lurking. I was taking pictures, taking video of Dejo and the other hitters doing beefy and everything. I was just like, because like they're seriously like 10 feet away. It's like,
yeah,
like right there. So you know, that stuff, moments like that, I'm hoping to catch some more stuff like that this year, especially with some of the highly touted prospects like Julio Rodriguez and Jared Kelnick and everyone. Maybe catch some insight or some, I don't know, see them smash some 400-foot dingers.
Well, the cool part to me seems like you'd be able to see things that like aren't going to be available anywhere else. Like, mm-hmm. there's not TV, obviously, on batting practice on a backfield.
No,
and there's
just
really
like
not
some
even
clips maybe.
Yeah, if you get like a beat reporter doing Twitter videos or whatever.
Right.
But other than that, it's like you're as close as you can get to watching just like a practice,
mm-hmm.
like a closed door situation that they let fans into. And that was one of the things I was going to ask you about. It feels like for a lot of people, one of the main appeals of spring training is that access you get to the players. But I'm also wondering like what the approach to this is, because I'm sure there's that weird feeling where you're like, I don't want to, like, they're at work essentially.
Totally.
I don't want to impose.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's hard to tell maybe sometimes, I would imagine, if it's like, if this is a fan time or this is a not fan time.
Right.
Like, did you learn anything about like the do's and don'ts of approaching players?
Yeah, I definitely witnessed some, you know, less than savory behavior by fans, like stuff that like I wouldn't ever do just because I'm old and like, you know, like when you see kids and stuff that are up there trying to get autographs, trying to get their attention, like that's one thing, that's part of it, and a lot of players, like, you know, they'll give it up for the kids and stuff like that. But I saw a lot of like old people, like 40-50-year-olds, like out there, especially in the areas, like there's you can stand next to the parking lot where all the players park.
Ooh.
And like as they leave and stuff, and like we were like walking by there, and like I heard these people talk about like, oh, there's Felix's car, there's Nelly's car, stuff like that. Like, they like knew what cars they drove and shit. So we're trying to get autographs from them like as they were leaving, you know, like it's just like, come on guys, like, and I've heard, you know, we've heard stories about people doing that and stuff, like with like Griffey and people like leaving the Kingdom and stuff like that, because
mm-hmm.
the parking lot was a lot more accessible back then than it is now at T-Mobile. But like, I don't know, that kind of stuff is kind of the darker side of that kind of that easy access that you have at spring training, because it invites people to, it invites that kind of darker side of human behavior when it comes to celebrities, quote
totally.
unquote, you know, like of not just acting in a way that you wouldn't do to a normal person. You wouldn't like barge in or try to like get their attention,
especially
at
again
because
they're at work.
Right.
You never barge into someone's office. Obviously, it's like an extreme example, but like
Kyle,
yeah,
come on, hook me up. Come
yeah.
on. Yeah,
especially like if it's on the way in too. I could not imagine
mm-hmm.
you pull up. You're like, especially if it's a game day, and you know,
yeah.
maybe if you're also a prospect and you like actually have to, not like they're all taking it seriously, but you
right.
have like there's more at stake for you in that spring training game than you have some random guy who's
right.
like, hey, blah, 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 you know, like, you sign this, do that, like I would not be down for that. And it honestly, like,
get
it,
to work, bro.
Yeah, it also does make me like respect professional athletes a little more when you realize how much is being taken from them or how much people want to insert themselves in their life.
Right.
Like, I would not, I don't even like that in my life, and no one is checking for me the same way they are for
yeah.
Kyle Seager, Mitch Haniger, anything like that.
Yeah, so it's like, I always just try to think about, like, you know, like, don't cramp your style, like, play it cool. If you like catch someone like outside of their kind of outside of the baseball area around,
yeah.
or like, and when they're actually at the field or something, like, don't, you know, make a big deal out of it. I mean, like, kids are gonna do what kids are gonna do, and that's
right.
fine. But like, if you're an adult, like, just like play it cool.
Yeah,
like, they'll appreciate it, and like, you won't cause a scene.
So for someone like you and your fellow adults who are listening to this, Like, what then would you say is the best time to approach for an autograph? Like, is there, like, a clear set time where it's like, okay, now this is where, like, it doesn't feel, like, intrusive or weird to go up to them? Like,
it seems like any time that they are walking, there's, like, areas of the backfields that are, like, that kind of seem like designated areas up against the fence where a lot of the kind of autograph seekers will congregate. So it's like, if players are up around there, then they're kind of fair game. And, erstwhile LL or Ben Theon would probably he's written about this at length, I think,
and yeah,
said some things about if you want to check out the Lookout Landing spring training preview piece that we posted last month, I think Ben wrote a whole section in there about the do's and don'ts of autograph seeking, so you can check that out because he knows a lot more about it than I do because he was kind of actively into So, yeah, I'll check that out. I don't know a ton about it just because that's not really my thing. If the opportunity presents itself and, like, there's not a ton of people and not, like, a ton of kids, then I'd go for it.
Right.
Like, I've done that in the past at, like, I was at the 2010 season ticket holders appreciation night.
Whoa.
Thing, you know?
Incredible.
And actually, my friend Victor and I, who I'm actually going down to Arizona with for his bachelor party this next week, is the reason I'm going. We had a partial season ticket package that's fateful unfortunate season.
No need to talk about what happened. Just cut it off after the season ticket holder event. The yearbook of 2010.
Yeah.
We can just remove all the pages after Eric goes to season ticket holder event.
Right. And anyways, my story is that I Felix was down there, and this was the year he won. He later got awarded the Cy Young, and so he was taking pictures with fans and signing stuff. So I got him to sign my glove, and we took photos with him and stuff. And
nice.
He was mildly friendly about it. Just like he wasn't a jerk or anything, but he was just like,
yeah,
okay, yep.
So you've never been then with kids.
With, like, trying to get autographs?
Like, you've never been to spring training with your own kid?
Oh, no. She was not born yet when we were there.
And she's not coming to the bachelor party, I'm assuming?
No, she's not coming to the bachelor party. I think it might be a little too wild for her.
Yeah, makes sense.
maybe when she's, like, 10 or 11.
Sure. I was just wondering if there was any insight into traveling with kids or what kids like at spring training.
Oh,
like,
man.
You could guess if you want.
I mean, yeah, just from my previous experience, I mean, it's got to be a blast. If your kid is old enough, like maybe five and above, and
to just,
like,
understand what's happening,
to know
what's
going on, and to be interested in baseball, like, it's like, I imagine it's probably heaven for kids that are into baseball. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, to me as a non-kid haver, one of the things that does seem appealing is the ability to impart your taste on your kid, and spring training seems perfect for that because it's like.
You can imprinted.
Right, but you can introduce them to baseball in a way that isn't, hey, there's 30,000 people here, and there's, like, you know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
If you kind of ease into spring training, that's also, like, vacation, so it's, like, good vibes. You know, the kid's going to remember the vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Introduce spring training, get them an autograph, get a picture, whatever. Yeah. That, to me, seems like a really easy transition that's different than, like, we're in the 300 level at Safeco, and they just see a bunch of dots on the field.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah, it's a much, much more approachable scale to it.
Right. This has been parenting advice from Matthew, who does not have kids. Okay, so let's move away from the field then in the spring training world, because obviously, like, you're not spending 24 hours a day at the field.
Right.
You know, usually there's a game or there's one thing you go to the field to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just in Arizona in the greater Phoenix area, I guess. Is Peoria, like, a suburb of Phoenix?
Basically, yes. Like,
okay.
It's its own city, as are all the other cities that have spring training facilities. Scottsdale.
Right.
Glendale, Goodyear.
Surprise, I know
Surprise,
that.
Surprise,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, these are all actual cities.
Surprise, Arizona sounds like a punishment.
Yeah. Surprise, you're in Arizona, and here's Sun City.
That's a place?
Yeah, that's a place.
Oh, they really mailed that one in.
Yeah, well, it's like primarily a retiree kind of destination place.
I see.
So, Sun City, baby. So anyways, Phoenix is, it's just a giant grid of highways.
Mm-hmm.
Every place you want to go is like 30 to 40 minutes away from each other. Pretty much, no matter what, it seems like it's very strange. Traffic can be kind of gnarly at times, but not. It wasn't terrible in my experience, unless you're going somewhere during rush hour.
Yeah, Dave Sims was complaining about that on the broadcast.
Yeah, that would be of major concern to him. And so there's some good food. I give some terrible food recs here. Number one being Chino Bandito.
Hell yeah, talk about it.
I have talked about on the site before, but it is a Chinese Mexican fusion cuisine place.
Say no more. That was the most ambitious crossover event of all time.
It was on Guy Fieri's show. Diners,
Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. How dare you? Also, it's Fieri.
Fieri.
That's how he says it, so I've tried to adopt that.
I tried and I blew it.
It's just so much funnier, too.
Fieri.
Knowing that at some point in his career, when he was already famous, he was like, hey guys, it's actually Fieri. That's so funny to me.
Say it right, okay?
Yeah.
So we went there, and it's not as, I mean, it is as goofy as it sounds, but it's like you can get a quesadilla with like General Tso's chicken in it. Fried rice with chili relleno and stuff like that. And so... and you get these combo meals. Every meal comes with a snickerdoodle, so it's just like really obvious stoner food.
Sure.
And
I was going to say, it sounds like it should be on a college campus.
Absolutely.
But maybe also the players. I mean, some of them are college age and can just still eat like garbage and just like go for like a 20-minute run the next day and that would be fine.
Yep. So it's a goofy little place, you know, best for late night intoxicated eats.
Probably. Is this in Peoria? Chino Bandito?
No, it's in Phoenix. Okay. Like closer to the downtown area, I think.
The bright lights.
Yeah.
Do you have any nightclub recommendations?
I do not. Like that? At this point, I looked on Yelp and there's Four Peaks Brewery has a location there, which is kind of Arizona's known craft brewery.
None of that.
There's a bunch of bars I saw and stuff like that. So
are our listeners invited to your friend's bachelor party?
I mean, sure, yeah.
Okay, cool.
At me on Twitter, at Sanford.
Eric will just drop a pin, and we'll have a bunch of random people in Mariners gear show up at his friend's bachelor party at Chino Bandito.
Hey, find me on the LL's Instagram feed.
There you go.
Drop a live video and be like, you know, hey, we're at Shake Shack. Come on down.
That's perfect. Thank you. Noted food and drink expert, Eric Sanford. I am a novice when it comes to fine dining, to the point where there was one instance recently where I thought that my poor consumption habits had given me gout, and you helped ensure me that I did not have gout, and in fact, my foot just hurt a little bit.
My expert medical opinion dissuaded you of that?
I think you were like, you probably don't have gout. I don't think that you are in the demographic of people who get gout. And then, but my foot did really hurt.
Yeah, that dreaded rich man's disease. Right?
I know, yeah. Oh, well, eating bullet dodged.
Too many cold cuts, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Maybe I might have actually, like, injured my foot. I'm very, socially and physically active, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen me tear it up in multiple athletic arenas.
I mean, you are quite athletic.
Thanks,
Eric. Let's take a divergent into a wiffle ball zone here.
Sure.
Upcoming wiffle ball season starts in May.
Talk about it.
Yeah, our team, the Cheryl Crows, named by Matthew, of course, because all the good ideas.
Well, named by Cheryl Crow.
Well,
I just made it in her image.
Sure, he took that and ran with it, and we're coming back for our second season, I think even though we'll be down our Barry Bonds / Babe Ruth and John Troopin,
right?
We got some new recruits, I think, and you know we'll.
I think it'll be a good trade
we'll
for
go.
Us. Yeah, getting rid of John to open up a roster spot for some other people who maybe are more hungry, you know, more willing to put in the effort that John bailed from midway through the season.
Just
an unprecedented
left
move.
Us hanging after he was hitting like 800.
Yeah, truly unbelievable. Yeah. But we moved on. Okay, I want to ask you a few more spring training specific questions before we go to sort of the second half of this.
Sure.
I have a genuine question that I don't know the answer to that I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
At spring training, like at the actual games, how chill are the ushers? Like if it's open in the front, can you just move down? Because the way I picture it, like to me it seems like it should be kind of like a college baseball game where it's like essentially general admission.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you get there first, you deserve the best seat. Is it like that, or do you have to actually like pay for a seat and kind of stay there the whole time?
Yeah, I'd say yes and no. And this is I'm mainly going to base my answer on my experience in Peoria, because at this point I've only been to one other stadium, and that was the one in Goodyear where Cleveland and Cincinnati play.
Okay.
And like it was pretty lax there. In terms of like we just bought general admission tickets and walked around the park.
So you can get a general admission.
Oh yeah.
That's
oh, yeah.
for like the hill and stuff.
The berm.
The berm. Sorry.
Yeah, berm tickets, as they say, or just GA. And so those are. That's definitely the way to go, in my opinion. And unless you're really, if you want to splurge a little bit, which is like it's like $40 for like a really good seat, like
yeah.
really good, like you know, like 5-10 rows back.
And I feel like that could be worth it if you were by the dugout, especially like to be able to hear some of the stuff that they're saying, or if you're between the dugout and like scouts and Jerry DePoto and all that, you'd get a lot of just fly on the wall stuff. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, we bought nice tickets for one game last time we went, and it was a night game. So that was really cool. If you get to go and they have a chance to go to a night game, which they only have a handful of, definitely do it, because like man, you get treated to just like an incredible sunset. Like,
yeah, that sounds really nice.
Right as the game is starting, and definitely gets a little chilly, so you know you got to bundle up or bring a jacket for that. But like the night games are really cool. Plus you're not just like frying your ass off out there. But
right.
but so anyways the. Yeah, so if you get a berm ticket, you can go wherever on the berm and in the GA sections. I didn't try to sneak into any like seats on those like day games that I went to in Peoria. So I don't really know how strict the ushers are. I imagine towards the end of the game, they're probably not really watching that much. So yeah, you can try your hand at that, but. I remember at the Goodyear game that we went to, by the like sixth inning, we went and sat down like on like the first base side, like towards the back, but in like actual seats. So
yeah,
it's not nearly as strict as they can be at T-Mobile.
So I was gonna I was gonna ask about that, because it's one of my many beefs I have with the ushers at T-Mobile are unbelievably strict. I don't know.
It really can be.
I as a person really struggle to relate to like hardcore rule followers. So like I've butted heads with them so many times, especially like. I get it in the nicer seats, but in the bleachers, like, I truly don't understand why they care.
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, on games that are, near sellouts, I get, like, they need to kind of maintain some sense of order there, at least for the first half of the game, you know? But after that, it's like, who gives a shit, man?
And they have, like, a weird ownership over their section. Like, it is my right to defend section 325 or whatever.
Right. Some of them
ragamuffins.
Are like that.
Yeah.
Not all of them are like that. Like I've had many like good interactions with ushers, so it really just depends on the usher and also like how just like confident you are in going and sitting down somewhere.
That's my whole thing. I won't stop, you know. You have to don't give them a reason to ask for your ticket or anything.
Just,
like
you just
got
to go for it.
You got to look the part, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like though we're due for an uprising, a revolution if you will. In this an election year, it's time to eat the ushers.
Oh man. Yes, let's get it. No, it's not getting.
No, we love everyone that's involved. Just having fun here on the internet.
Yeah. So, let's see. The games that we're going to, I'm there this year. We're going to four games. Hopefully.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
First one against the Diamondbacks at their stadium.
Might see some Mike Leake.
Talking stick. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Might see good old smoking Mike Leake.
Yeah.
Gotti's hero.
Yeah. Catch him. That'd be a good time to ask for an autograph when he's taking one of his smoke breaks.
True.
Have him sign a pack of Lucky Strike or whatever.
Have him sign my lighter or something.
That would be incredible.
That'd be amazing.
He would be the kind of guy I think who would sign a lighter. Maybe not an actual pack of cigarettes, but I think he would think it was funny.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And so, yeah, we don't know for a fact if Mike Leake smokes. In fact, he probably does not.
I'm sure he does it as he is a professional athlete.
Yeah, as an athlete. But if there were a pitcher who smoked, it'd probably be.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's just an old joke. So we're seeing the Diamondbacks in Talking Stick, which I've never been to. I've heard it's pretty nice. The tickets for that, for general admission, were hella expensive, though.
Really?
Yeah, like, with fees, it was like $30.
You think that's because it's Arizona and there's actual Diamondbacks fans there?
I guess, yeah.
That is tough, though.
Yeah, that's a little bit, that's way too much for practice baseball.
Yeah.
And then we're going to see the Royals in Peoria.
Oof.
I'm stoked for that, just because... To be back in Peoria.
And to learn about the Royals.
And then the Cubs at Sloan Park, which is in Mesa, I think. Don't fact check me.
I absolutely won't.
And I've never been there before, so many people, including Kate, have warned me of how crazy it gets there, so I bought my tickets ahead of time.
Crazy how? Like, we'll sell out?
Crazy crowded, yeah.
Yeah, like, I think Cubs fans, notorious travelers.
Yeah, just a bunch of savages who won't travel for any Cubs-related purpose, and so they packed that one out, it sounds like. So I got my GA tickets. They were like 24 with fees, which is still,
this is the good stuff.
Still too much, but it's fine. And then the last game is against the Rockies back in Peoria. And so in Peoria, the general admission tickets are only $12.
Wow.
Maybe with a couple extra bucks for fees. But $12, that's like the right price for general admission practice baseball. That's
right.
That's like the peak of what I'm willing to pay.
How much are concessions? Are they also pretty reasonable?
In my recollection, they're pretty normal baseball,
not like
stadium prices. It's a little bit cheaper, but not like, no, whoa, what a deal,
right? Or no moments you're like, wow, that's way too expensive.
No, not really. So I think most beers are probably like 5 to 7, maybe more if it's a fancier one on tap. But so overall it's a more cost effective experience, but still, like, there's certain things about it that you're like, oh, that feels like that should be cheaper for a practice baseball game.
Well, if they realize that they can monetize spring training a little more, I think that's going to be a dangerous thing for fans. You know, because it does seem like it's one of the last sort of pillars of, like, purity in baseball, you know?
Besides the minors that they're trying to contract?
Exactly, yeah. Like, they're really, they have their fingers on everything that is, like, cheap and pure and not, you know, like, corporate and sanitized.
Right.
And now, you know, I'm hoping that this doesn't lead to, like, you know, spring training jerseys with sponsor patches or things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, they go all out in the team stores there in terms of, like, making spring training specific stuff, like, you know, it's all about the Cactus League imagery and, like, everything.
Yeah, that could be fun.
Has Arizona kind of stuff on it, and you know, you can only get it there, so that's kind of cool. And myself as a uniform Mariners or uniform and baseball aesthetics nerd,
sure,
I get into some of that stuff. So yeah, I might even try to splurge on one of those dumb new hats this year, even though.
Oh yeah,
I mean, the M logo is one thing, the one that they switched to last year because they got away from the trident with the teal brims and everything, which I thought was a great look.
I think it looks great, but I think it's also hilarious that, to me, it speaks to how influential the Mariners online community is. Everyone talking about the curse, I think, is the only reason why they got rid of that hat.
Totally caved. Yeah. Yeah, they were like, okay, we can't do this anymore. Like,
especially if it led to, like, a decrease in revenue. Like, if it was enough of a groundswell that they were losing money, like, that... Good job, everyone out there. That's incredible.
That's
we influenced
question.
Real doings with the club.
I wonder if that was a reason why they changed it all. Because it seemed like the teal brim trident hats were really popular.
I love
them. I see them everywhere still.
Yeah.
And so I think it was a big seller, but I think, I mean, both just like, it probably has to do with the timing of rebrands with New Era, too, when they're like, okay, we're changing the hat again this year in terms of the layout of the logos and shit, so, like, you should do something new, too. And so, you know, most of the teams do change it up whenever there's, like, a major kind of hat-style rebrand that New Era does.
Yeah. I'm jealous, though, because I love... One of my favorite things about sports memorabilia is, like, getting stuff that is only available in one place, like Cactus League gear, or, like, stuff that's only at spring training.
Yep.
As I was earlier this weekend, actually, a couple days ago, me and a couple of the boys went to Portland for a Blazers-Pelicans game.
Nice.
Yeah, I went and saw Zion Williamson in person, who is incredible. But we were at, like, a thrift store in Portland the day after, and I saw something that was very of a time and place that I'm sure you'll remember, which was a Portland Trailblazer shirt with the Tasmanian Devil on it, dunking super hard. And I want to bring back Looney Tunes gear. I think that had to have been right after Space Jam, right?
Like, it had to be, yeah.
The Looney Tunes were just all over gear. Like,
oh,
I've seen a lot of, like a big thing that I'm sure is still happening on college campuses and music festivals everywhere is the Toon Squad jersey.
Mm.
Those have had a complete revival, and it's like 25 years since Space Jam came out.
Yeah.
And they're still popular. So I think we need to do the whole like make retro in again, kind of like the chunky Filas or the acid wash jeans, and bring back Looney Tunes sports gear.
Yeah, I want a shirt that has Taz and Bugs
exactly
wearing a jersey and jeans backwards like crisscross, yeah. But with a Mariners jersey. Like that's what I want.
What if
XXL tall tee?
I think we're onto something here also with Taz and Bugs, maybe a Jared and Julio situation.
I like that. Yeah.
We need to think of a nickname. I'm putting it upon ourselves to give Jared and Julio a nickname. Not right now, but we've already started White Claw, which is sweeping the nation. A nickname for Evan
just
White.
Just like the drink.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's, yeah.
It just catches on.
It's called the Zeitgeist. Look it up. All right.
Please add us with your picks for a nickname for the Jared and Julio combo.
Yeah, this is a collaborative. We don't want to feel like we're talking at you. Please help us market Jared and Julio in a way that will also make me personally more money. All right, Eric. You, as you said, are our number one listener, probably the man leading all of our engagement on the podcast. So as you know, obviously, all off-season we've been doing conversations with people about how they became Mariners fans, digging into sort of the reasons why not only people decided to support the Mariners, but I think more interestingly why they choose to continue to do it despite, you know, everything, all of
gestures at entire Mariners org.
Well, and for a lot of people, not to get too into it already, but like it's our entire life for a lot of people. People my age have very fuzzy memories of the Mariners being good at best. And then recently, it's the whole theme is like they almost did it. But you, not to give away, you know, age or anything or any sort of inclinations into your personal life, you have been around for, I think, the good, the bad, the good, the bad, like the whole sort of sine wave of Mariner fandom.
Yeah.
So I want to know first, what that's done to you as a person. That's, I think, the thing I'm most interested in as someone who was so invested from a young age and then got into it as like a content person who has to follow the team a little more objectively, what that did. And then also, if you want to talk about sort of your origin story, the floor is yours to do that as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's been the most fascinating thing about this series, though, the Why I'm a Mariners Fan series that you've been doing with people, is especially the folks that came to the Mariners either like post 2010 or like just came to it on their own, like didn't grow up with the game or their parents were not into it and they just found it on their own.
Yeah,
that's been really fascinating to me to hear them talk about that, because they, you know, even though the team has been mostly bad for however long they've been following them, they still derive some sense of joy from the game and from the Mariners. Just whether it's like they were obsessed with Brendan Ryan or something, and that was their entry point, you know, and that was their guy, and it just continued for them. So that's been really cool to hear about that. Just because I think about it from my perspective as someone like you said who actually experienced the good times. And that's what I cling to as to some of the reasons why I continue to be a fan and follow the team so closely, because I can think back on some of those handful of like incredible moments, and so that's been the coolest part of this series, is hearing other people's stories, even if they don't have those like those 1995 moments to cling to, or 2001, like they're still like, well, I'm still, you know, I'm down for it. You know, this is what I like about baseball, and that's what I like about Mariners. So that's been really cool. As far as, yeah, so I'm 36.
Congrats.
I have been around the Mariners for a long time now, it feels like. So my dad and my mom were both from Maryland, and they came out here when my dad was drafted in the Army during Vietnam and was stationed at Madigan Hospital. And they decided they liked it better out here in the Northwest, no humidity and all that.
Yeah.
And so decided to stay out here and start a family out here.
Interesting.
And my dad he grew up as a huge Washington Senators fan. And then that team moved away twice, you know, while he was a kid.
I actually didn't know the twice part until the Nationals won the World Series, and that story kept getting replicated.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it was like they had a team left, got a new team. They also left. That's horrible.
Isn't that fucked up? Yeah. I still can't believe that. And it was for not good reasons, too.
Right.
Yeah, like, it was like because owner was racist, basically.
I did know that, yeah.
Yeah, didn't want black people coming to Senators games because they were in a cheaper part of town.
Right, Chocolate City, baby.
Yeah, so anyways, so he didn't really have a team, because he was past the point of, like, you know, getting into the Orioles or anything like that.
Sure. And that feels like, for some people, that feels very phony.
Totally, totally, yeah. For some people, it's like, no, that's not an option. Yeah. So when they came out here, it was in the early 70s, and then by the time the Mariners started in 77, so my dad worked for MBBJ, which is an architectural firm that designed Safeco Field.
Oh, wow.
And also finished the work on the Kingdom when it was being designed.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
And so he always had a connection, kind of an in with getting tickets to the games because of that. And so I grew up with, you know, I was very, very lucky to have such easy access to going to Mariners games, even when they were terrible, you know. So because I mean that was always the thing, like when they were in the Kingdom, it's like he's like, yeah, we have season tickets, we can barely give them away, you know.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So like. So we went to a lot of games in the Kingdom, and then in...
So what era is this then, when you're going to the most shitty Mariners games?
Okay, so yeah, let's start with one of my earliest, fuzziest memories, which I really don't remember this, but I've heard the story enough times. Was Randy? We went to the game where Randy Johnson threw his no hitter.
Oh, wow!
In 1990.
Okay, so you're how old?
I was like 6.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't really remember it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Part of that was because I was sick at the they had tickets and they went, and I was either under the weather already or became sick at the game, and so we left, like in the 5th or 6th inning or something like that. And my dad was like, "He's kind of throwing a no hitter here. sure they're gonna leave." My mom's like, "Oh yeah, he's sick. We gotta go." As any responsible parent would.
Sure.
So we were there, but we missed his no hitter. So
Wow.
Always stay till the end if you can. But
advice.
That's something that, you know, in my 20s and my early 30s, I really always tried to stick to that. It's just like
yeah.
But then once you have a kid, your priorities change.
I'm totally the same way. I will leave if the Mariners are down by like 8. But if it's just like a game and I have nothing else to do and it's just boring, I'm like, what would I be doing at home that's better than this?
Yeah, I paid for it. I'm here. I might as well just hang out. Yeah.
We had one of those last year. Me and a couple friends are at a Mariners-Padres game. Mm-hmm. And the Padres pitcher, who I don't even remember who they were, had a no-hitter like into the 7th. Mm-hmm. And then when it ended, we were like, well, should we go? And then we kind of looked at each other and we're like, no. Like, we're going to watch these random guys. Like, I mean, the Padres had, like, Tatis and Machado. So, like, we'll watch their at-bats. And then after that, maybe get another beer and then just sit outside. Like, it's better than the alternative most of the time if you don't have real responsibilities to get to.
Yeah, if there's nothing else going on, then why not ride it out? But then my first memory, actual like game that I remember well was going to the Kingdom was I think it was in 1991. In early spring, so like early season, and my dad came and picked me up from school, took me out of school.
That's
which,
such
like,
a tight move.
He worked in Seattle. We lived in Edgewood, which is down by Puyallup, so it's like a 40-minute drive at least. He went to work, he came back, picked me up from school, took me out of school, which, you know, I felt like king shit, you know.
Right.
Thought I was the coolest ever. And took me back to a matinee game at the Kingdom, and like I remember it was a matinee just because like it was so bright, it was like bright sunny spring day, and then you go inside and it's so dark and dank in the Kingdom.
Yeah,
and
man,
like, that was such like a visceral experience.
Yeah, and I don't know that at all. I mean, I've been to Safeco where the roof was closed, but that you still see outside.
Daylight.
So like, that's just me, like the only thing I can think of is like a movie theater or something
that. It's kind of like
completely
that.
Shut off from the outside world.
Have you ever been to Pacific Science Center?
The Laser Dome.
Oh, yeah.
Who are you talking to?
It's kind of like that, like honestly, or it was like that.
Uh-huh.
Like, and they would have like laser light shows there, like after games in the 80s and 90s.
That,
yeah, but... it was real goofy. That's one of my earliest clear memories of going to the Kingdom.
That's actually really funny because I have a very similar story to that where my dad pulled me out of school, but for a way bigger game. This was 2000, ALDS.
Oh,
my
yes.
dad, similar thing, he worked in Seattle. Maybe he didn't go to work that day. I don't know the logistics of it, but we were in Sammamish. He came to my class with like a hand broom with white socks tied around it, because if the Mariners won that game, they were going to sweep the White Sox. And then they did. That was the Carlos Guillen walk-off bunt.
Right.
And I don't remember that part, obviously, because I was in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. But I remember for sure my dad showing up in my classroom with a broom and socks tied around it. And I'm sure having to explain that to the teacher and some of the kids who didn't understand the meaning of that. But I remember thinking, like, A, this is awesome. I'm leaving school. And B, like, wow, my dad is a superhero. Like, you know, showing up and, like, heroically whisking me out of, you know, the oppression of school. Yeah, to go to a playoff game.
Oh, a playoff game. Yeah. Yeah, so speaking of playoff games, I've been to one as well. And is that the only one, only Mariners playoff game you've been to?
I'm fairly positive that we went to other, probably went to a, at least one ALCS game in 2000, but I don't remember it.
Okay.
I remember the White Sox one because it was getting pulled out of school.
Yeah, that memorable experience. Yeah, so I've only been to one. 1997, it was the first game of the ALDS against the Orioles.
Yeah, that's like the Mariners playoff run that no one ever talks about.
Yeah.
Because 95 has everything.
It was over real quick.
Yeah, and then 2000, it has the Roger Clemens, a bunch of strikeouts. Right, and 2001 is obviously, it's all a Mariners thing too. But 97 is like, and you can't really find a lot of videos of it either. Like, it seems like it was very just gone.
Yeah, well, the team was strange, and like our own Amanda Lane has wrote extensively about the 1997 team last offseason, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So if you're familiar, if you want to check that out, you should, because she wrote some awesome stuff about it. Because they hit a million home runs, they set the MLB record for home runs that season.
Yeah,
which stood until recently when the Yankees
until like the juice ball era. Yeah, so if you're a purist, you can just claim that the Mariners still have it.
So they just hit a billion dingers, had no pitching whatsoever, and their bullpen was terrible. It was just, it was Randy Johnson and maybe Jeff Fusaro was there at the time.
We have the power to find out. Keep talking.
So like, it was just like, if they scored, you know, 10 or 12 runs, they still might give up 8 or 9 and you know, pull off a win. But they were just, you know, I thought they were awesome at the time. I was like, okay, 95 was amazing, but this is it. They're doing it this year. They're just hitting the crap out of the ball. Randy Johnson's amazing. They're playing. Who are the Orioles? Fuck the Orioles. Come on. Yeah, you know, Mike Mussina, come on, get out of here.
Birds.
Yeah, Mike Mussina proceeded to outpitch Randy Johnson in that game one. And then again in game three, it worked out that Randy went again against Mike Mussina again and lost again.
Tough.
So it was a 3-game sweep. They were out. But my dad took me to game one in the Kingdom. And I still have the ticket stub, and it was an awesome experience, even though they lost.
Yeah,
I was sad about that, but I mean, I didn't get to go to any of the 2001 playoff games just because it was just so expensive and just crazy. Because people don't remember this for either they weren't alive or just don't remember in general. But when Safeco Field opened, like, every game was a big deal. Like, it was like near sellouts for the first like 2 or 3
seasons. And that, I think, has affected people more than we realize, because for people my age, I'm 24. So my first memories of baseball are basically Safeco Field in that era where every game was an event. Yeah. So then when that starts to fade away, like, I think to me it kind of makes sense why we have the like sort of lapse in Mariner fandom that's happened, where people aren't nearly as excited about it. Because then if you're going from basically 2004 to 2013, it's not a fun place to be at all.
I mean, if you're a huge baseball nerd, it's great, you know.
Yeah,
it's still
it doesn't have the
stadium,
the event feel that it did when every game was sold out. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Also, I want to the 97 Mariners. You're right. It was Randy Johnson and Jeff Fusaro, but Jamie Moyer was also good.
Oh, he was. Oh, that's right. That's
he
right.
was. Yeah. He went 17-5 with a 3.86 ERA.
Shout out to Jamie.
The number four starter, Bob Walcott, had a 6.03 ERA, which is not good. And the bullpen had some guys. You have Josias Manzanillo, the guy who got hit in the balls.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy was there. You have 43-year-old Dennis Martinez was on the team. He had a 7.71 ERA in 9 starts. So I guess he wasn't even a bullpen guy. He only started. And then you also have Derek Lowe, who they ended up trading in one of the worst moves ever. It sends Veritek and him out. But yeah, then like Norm Charlton and Ayala are
extremely washed. Norm Charlton,
7.27 ERA.
And Ayala, who was also...
I also want to point out, for anyone who is at a computer, do not do this if you are driving, to look up the 97 Mariners on BRF and look at Jay Buhner's picture. My man looks high as fuck.
Just happy to be here, Hoss.
He looks like he found out about picture day mid-bong rip and had to put on his jersey.
Also, Joey Cora there with his hat, like, hat all the way up on, yeah, on top of his forehead, like Daniel Vogelbach style.
They need to do at least one game a year with those hats.
Oh, the silver brim hats. Yeah, that was when I was a teenager, I didn't have, like, a Mariners hat for a long time because I was, like, kind of thought I was too cool for baseball for a while. But I remember I bought my first, like, fitted New Era hat in a while, and it was the silver brim Mariners hat, and I really like that one.
Yeah, the Mariners have way too many throwback options to not be using them.
Exactly.
They do, like, one a year with the Trident 70s one, and that's basically it. Like, they really don't ever wear the like 80s, the one that Griffey debuted in.
So they do the one turn back the clock night of the year, and they do a different uniform each time. Past season, I think it was the early 90s yellow S one, which is my personal favorite.
Yeah, I like those jerseys a lot, and they never wear them.
Yeah, I wish they would keep that just like in the rotation, like
exactly
as like just a, you know, twice once every month.
And that's like coming back. The Phillies, I know for sure, do that, where they wear their powder blue 80s throwbacks. Like, it seems like once a week. I could be wrong about that, but they wear them a lot.
More teams should do that, and it'd be extra dope if the Mariners brought back.
Well, and you can make money if you do that. Right, like, that's the part that doesn't make any sense. You could, if you wear them, you can sell them. Yeah.
If the Mariners brought back the road powder blue unis from the 70s, those were always dope.
Yeah.
You don't see those very often, unless they're on the road for another team's turn back the clock night.
Yeah.
So I'll tell one more story of my Mariners fandom youth, just because.
Please.
You've had many people on the show, many old white dudes like myself who have pretty much told the same stories. You know, shout out to like Brian Floyd and stuff. I thought he was great on the pod.
Yeah, and by the way, that's no one's fault. No, if you're a certain age and you grew up here, obviously you're going to be like, I loved Griffey and I loved Dave Niehaus, so I love the Mariners.
Exactly. Like, yeah, because that's the reason why I get the exhaustion with the nostalgia that people often have about the Mariners. But it's like, if you were there and went through that, like it was like literally the coolest experience.
Yeah. Well, I think too, we've kind of beaten this to the ground, and like it's come up very often naturally, but I think it's exactly what's happening with the Seahawks for the younger generation now, where you see kids any time of year wearing Seahawks gear.
And exactly.
Like, they care about the Seahawks a million times more than the Mariners, just because they were born at a time when the Seahawks were in the playoffs every year.
Oh yeah. Any kind of like communal experience where you watch a pivotal playoff game with a bunch of people, or just any viewing of it. It creates this like this incredible like bond with you and the team, and because of that memorable experience.
Yeah, especially if it's the first one, like the Mariners making the playoffs for the first time, or the Seahawks winning their first championship.
Yeah. So it's like you can't hold it against, you know, people for like clinging onto that because it's such like a transformative experience. And so on that note, the last story I want to tell was in 1995. The magical season of when they played game 163 against the Angels, the then California Angels.
Right.
A lot of people forget that.
No one is talking about this. California erasure. The Angels are really good at not admitting that they play in Anaheim.
Yeah. They just claim
every little part of
Los Angeles, the entire state of California.
Honestly, I think the California Angels is the best name they've had.
I agree.
Like, if they want to not be the Anaheim Angels, they should be California.
Yeah. It rolls right off the tongue. Yeah. You know? And they had cooler jerseys back then.
They did.
Anyways, so it was game 163. I am in the beginning of sixth grade at that point.
Okay.
So just like a very like memorable age in general. And that game was played in the middle of the day. And I remember from 1 o'clock in the afternoon on, they let the entire school into a little auditorium at Northwood Elementary School. Shout out to Northwood, all my Edgewood homies.
Gang gang.
They let us into they call it the pit, because it had like
they opened up the pit
because it had tiered seating and stuff. and rolled in the giant TV on the huge crate, you know.
I know the rolling TV.
Oh yeah, rolling TV.
To me, that signified that we were going to watch Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Exactly. Yeah. But this time they just threw on the Mariners pivotal game 163 and let like the whole school watch it for the rest of the day.
That's so tight.
And like, yeah, so it's exactly what you imagine. It's a bunch of 4th, 5th, 6th graders just like losing their minds at like every hit, every like big moment. And it's just absolutely burned into my brain when Luis Soho got the hit where the ball got stuck under the bullpen bench and everybody scored, you know, like that moment, like because when that happened, it was clear, like, okay, they're going
to
win.
Yeah, that's the kind of dumb shit that only happens if you're destined to win.
Exactly. They're going to do it. And like, you know, Randy's still going strong. Yeah. This lead will carry them. And man, like the entire school just like lost their minds. And, like,
I bet.
It was like the craziest, coolest experience. And so like it was just unforgettable. And so being through that, like that moment sticks out like stronger to me than game 5 of the ALDS against the Yankees. Because I think I just watched that at home. Probably,
yeah,
it's
sports are so contextual. Like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's very easy to forget big moments if you're by yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, and like I mean, like obviously I remember it just because of the highlights of it being shown a million times.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
like it was different just watching it at home with my folks than like being with my peers at school on like a special occasion where they let us out of our classes and just got to watch this live event as it happened.
Yeah.
Like,
wow.
Man, that was like I remember just like going home and be like, the Mariners won, Mom! They did it! They let us watch the rest of the game. It was so cool. Like it was just
that's so funny.
The coolest thing ever.
Because I think something that I realized about myself is I think one of the main reasons why I'm doing this and why I started writing about the Mariners, like I was doing it on like a personal blog that no one was reading when I was like 19 and 20.
Shout it out. Was it still there?
Yeah, it's still there somewhere. It was a Blogspot joint. Mm. Sports Rhymes and Life.
Hell yeah.
But anyway, nice. I realize now, it's much clearer now, that I think I started doing that because for essentially the Cano era, we'll call it, 2014 to 2018, mm-hmm. I was in college for most of that, but in college in San Diego with not very many Mariners fans.
Right.
So I'd be watching all these games by myself and didn't really have anyone to talk to. Like, this was before I was part of Lookout Landing, obviously, mm-hmm. so I didn't know who you were or any of the other people who mm-hmm. write for the site were. So I had all these thoughts about the Mariners and all these things that I wanted to express that I didn't have a way to, so I just started writing them. And I think if I was surrounded by other Mariners fans, or even if I went to college like at UW where I could have watched those games with mm-hmm. other people,
yeah.
it would have been such a different experience and like more of a communal thing than for me. What I will remember about the Cano era is like that was for me. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like it feels like that was something that was... I didn't really share with that many people because of just the circumstances
right.
of where I was living amongst apathetic San Diego people.
Yeah. People who their brains just been fried by the sun and
yeah.
they kind of care about the Padres, but not really.
Not really. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. You were like clinging on to, you know, a part of your home.
Yeah.
Kind of
and it kind of was like an identity thing. Like this is
yeah.
unique to me now that I'm in San Diego that I had like a James Jones jersey. It's like literally the equivalent of like the
99.
Band that no one's heard of. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. You're just like,
yeah.
all right, I'm fine. This flag.
Yeah.
If someone sees it and knows what it is, then,
exactly.
then we're gonna have a conversation. But like,
yeah.
No, I'm letting everybody know that I'm the coolest Mariners fan in San Diego right now.
Probably was. Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if there was any competition on that.
Yeah, the community are like wanting to reach out to try to experience more community like that, so you started writing about it. That's the exact reason why I found Lookout Landing.
Yeah.
Because I just moved back to Seattle after going to college in Bellingham at Western, where I didn't pay that much attention to the team for like four years, like from 2003 to 2007-ish.
Yeah,
kinda,
good years to check out.
Kind of checked out for a while just because I was more focused on college and playing in bands and just was like I would still go to games whenever I came back down
and it's hard to access too, like I had MLB TV
yeah.
luckily, but that's not a thing
anymore. Yeah, that was not a thing back then.
Yeah.
Well,
or at least not as
easily
available. Mainstream. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. And so when I moved back down to Seattle is when I started following the team much more closely again, and when Griffey came back in 2009, I was really excited,
mm-hmm.
just because I was so heartbroken when he left for Cincinnati when I was a kid, and it was just like, well, I know he's old, but it's exciting that he's coming back and gonna try to
yeah.
finish his career here probably. So I was looking for more kind of interesting news sources than beyond just the Seattle PI and Seattle Times and stuff like that. And, you know, came across Lookout Landing and USS Mariner and kind of and just never looked back in terms of, like, wow, like, this is an actual, like, online community of Mariners nerds who, like, get it. They understand, like, how rough it is, like, as a Mariners fan for the most part, of them losing all the time. But it's also an incredibly smart and funny community in terms of how they talk about the team. And I'm very thankful to Kate for giving me a shot. And I think when she brought you on, it was the beginning of 2018.
Yeah, like literally opening day.
Yeah,
2018.
Yeah. I think, are you still her favorite on the staff? I think.
Oh man, I mean.
She's said that many times about you.
Wow. In that case, yes. If Kate said it, then obviously it must be true.
I mean, Nat's kind of got the new hotness because he's the young gun on the staff. But I don't know. I think Matthew has the staying power still.
Well,
so anyways, that's kind of the arc of my fandom, is from a kid that just that like, you know, was onboarded by Griffey being the coolest fucking baseball player ever, and the explosion of baseball card culture in the late 80s, early 90s was a huge part of it for me, to the team, you know, sucking but having Griffey and Edgar and interesting players, Randy Johnson, and then actually doing it and making the playoffs. That whole experience and that sold me for life. Yeah.
Look at us now.
And then here we are.
In a boardroom.
An exclusive boardroom.
Yeah.
Podcasting about the 2020 Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, I mean, when I find myself in times of trouble, mother blogging comes to me.
Wow.
I think if anything, Lookout Landing has made my ability to write parody songs much, much better.
Yeah.
That was just off the dome. I mean, if we actually work on that, I think we have another hit. To add to this boardroom where you see all the gold records.
Yes, the gold record for Thank You Mets.
Yeah, which is actually an unreleased song. We still got a gold record for it, which I think is the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah, it was unprecedented.
Yeah. Well, Eric, this was a lot of fun. I can't let you go without you plugging yourself a little more. Tell the people where to find all your work on the World Wide Web.
All right, let's see. So, you can find me on Lookout Landing. I still go by @Sanford and Son on the site.
I love that. You're the only one who doesn't use their real name. It feels very, like, late 90s message board.
It's me. It's me, Eric Sanford. I go by the same name on Twitter. So, follow me on there. Let's see. Like I said, follow at Lookout Landing on Instagram. Wait, I think it's...
I think there's a dot in there.
Yeah, it's at Lookout.Landing. Yes, that's what it is, because there have been other accounts in the past that we no longer have access to.
Listen, it happens.
It happens, yeah. And respond to the prompts on Fan Post Fridays, you cowards.
Sometimes those lead to people getting jobs, too. Nick Stillman wrote a fan post and then was writing for the site until he was oppressed by fascist California, basically.
Yeah, that,
which is a bummer. Nick, we love you if you're listening.
Nick Stillman he flew too close to the sun.
Yeah, kind of like a flash in the pan. Almost like I'm trying to think of, like a Michael Pineda, maybe? Trying to think of a Mariners example.
Rookie year,
John
Michael
Jaso,
Pineda.
That one year when
John
he was
Jaso.
Really good. Yeah.
Yep, that's Nick Stillman. He came, he blogged hard.
He blogged so hard.
California said, whoa, whoa, whoa. No more freelancing. That's you're blogging too hard, buddy.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened. But we love you, Nick, and hopefully you still stick around out there and drop into the comments and whatnot.
Absolutely. And we love all of you. I am, of course, on Twitter at mroberson22. Do everything that Eric said. Also, follow us. Read the site. We have real game recaps that are coming out for spring training. I don't know logistically how we're doing the non-TV ones, but we'll figure something out.
You know, that fun fact, real quick, to go back to the first game I recapped, the first spring training game, was a no radio, no TV game.
Oh, man. So like, you were just doing, like, box score?
Yeah. I was just coming up with nonsense just based off of the MLB app, you know, and just off the box score and stuff. So it was against the Diamondbacks, and I made a Simpsons joke about whacking day. That was about it.
Cool. I don't know what that means, but it sounds hilarious. All right, everyone. We're going to have more stuff, obviously. Keep your eye on this space, and we will carry you into opening day and throughout as the Mariners do whatever it is they're going to do
follow
this
the
season.
Follow the Miners.
Catch up with Eric at spring training if you'll be there. You can find him at Chino Bandito, just neck deep in snickerdoodles.
Wearing a flaming button-up shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Aquaman guy.
Yes. Doing a Guy Fieri cosplay. And like and subscribe, obviously, if you want to give us an iTunes rating. That would help us immensely. And until next week, bye.
Bye.